OWCP at Al. Solomons.
This is an employer's black lung appeal. We're seeking relief from an award of benefits and from an award of attorney's fees and costs as well in this case. The issue on the merits is really a very simple one. It is the one apart from the fees and costs issue. This is a case in which the only way the claimant gets benefits is by invoking a rebuttable presumption of entitlement to benefits. The presumption is invoked on the basis of relevant evidence showing that the minor has a very advanced stage of black lung disease called complicated pneumoconiosis or progressive massive fibrosis. There's evidence in this record that he has it. There's evidence that he does not have it. And very simply stated, the point we make here is that where there is an irrebuttable presumption like that, we are entitled to have the administrative law judge do two things: to accurately consider the record and to consider the entire record and to give an explanation why. And as much as we don't get a rebuttal, evidence that is otherwise probative and relevant is rejected or is less credible than other evidence showing that the disease is present. The administrative law judge made a lot of mistakes here. This is not a substantial evidence review. You can't do substantial evidence review when the ALJ does not accurately consider all of the evidence, or, for that matter, consider all of the evidence.
Mr. Solomon, the board stated that from the time of the earliest identification of a large opacity in December of 1990, there were six positive readings, two negative readings, and one report that an X-ray was unreadable from a duly qualified radiologist. The board then immediately states, employer does not challenge the accuracy of these findings. That's Appendix 13. Are you now challenging
that? No, I think the board's incorrect. And the ALJ was incorrect, too.
So you are now challenging those findings?
Well, I reject the characterization of now, because we challenged it before. There's three, of all the x-rays in this record, there's three readers. Now, so one guy did a couple. He did three readings. But there are three readings that find complicated pneumoconiosis by a duly qualified reader. There's three readings by equally duly qualified readers that don't find it. The administrative law judge counted wrong. And the reason he counted wrong was because he counted it 4 and 2, and when it was really 3 and 3. And that's because the trial counsel stipulated to the credentials of this Dr. Acoff as being, and he is board certified V reader. So, I mean, it's an inaccuracy. It's one of many inaccuracies in this record. I mean, this isn't any kind of a lay-down case here, but the fact of the matter is when dealing with an irrebuttable presumption, let me tell you all the things the administrative law judge blew off, didn't consider, gave no thought to. And he didn't, because he didn't say anything about it. First of all, complicated pneumoconiosis is a really bad disease. I mean, you're a sick person when you have this disease. You're going to have very, very substantial pulmonary impairment with this disease. This man basically has no pulmonary impairment, and there is an alternative explanation offered by highly qualified experts that the man, the condition that was shown on the x-ray was tuberculosis, which is not uncommon. Administrative law judge doesn't say why he didn't find that to be credible or not credible. Now, he could find that it's not credible, but what we're asking here, and unfortunately this is typical of the black lung cases, is that where you have this kind of evidence, when you have good proof, and they talked about the nature of the x-rays, they talked about the nature of the pulmonary impairment that was detected by many, many tests that were given. He had a positive TB test. He began treatment for TB. TB shows up the same way on an x-ray as complicated pneumoconiosis. What was wrong with that? I mean, he could possibly, on this record, have rejected it, but he's got to tell us why. That's really all it's about.
Is there any reason apparent in the record why you think the ALJ had to credit your preferred x-rays over those favoring Mr. Hawkins?
No. He didn't have to consider... Let me say one thing. You got to consider more in the x-rays. This is not just x-rays. There are other things. We said that the Sixth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit and Lester, the Sixth Circuit and Gray, talk about the statutory requirement of considering all relevant evidence. When you're talking about whether a man has got this horribly serious disease, then it is relevant, as the Sixth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit have found, that he doesn't have any impairment that looks like a pneumoconia. He doesn't have any impairment of a respiratory nature of any significance at all. It's important. No, the administrative law judge does not have to credit our experts. He does not have to credit our doctors. He just got to consider them. That's the whole case on this point.
But the ALJ did articulate a number of reasons for choosing to credit certain x-ray readings.
After miscounting the x-rays, the only reason he articulates is that he found the x-rays to be positive. He doesn't care about the rest of it, but the rest of it is relevant, and the law requires him to consider it. The administrative law judge does not give a reason, other than the fact that he found the x-rays to be positive for this disease, why these other factors, why these diagnoses of there's differing opinion on these things. I'm not arguing about that.
Would you argue that he chose to give more weight to the more recent x-ray evidence?
I'm not sure that he did that. The x-ray, Dr. Tarver, who's the main guy finding complicated, he keeps finding it all the way along back here. And you know, the fact of the matter is that he's going to find the more recent x-ray evidence to be more relevant. I mean, there's a recent x-ray. They've got to knock out these last two here because these were under the regulations. You can't look at them because they lost them, so they were not available for cross-examination. But the... he could say that he's going to have to give a reason why those more recent x-rays are more relevant, because I'll tell you, the more recent pulmonary tests, the more recent tests that show the other side of the case, that indicates that perhaps it is tuberculosis and not pneumoconiosis, that all is pretty recent too. So if you're going to look at the evidence that is, he could do that and say, yeah, I'm going to just go with the 1997 x-ray. He doesn't have any record to allow him to do it. He's making up a record to do that, but he's going to have to explain on the other side of the coin why it is that these pulmonary tests, which also show no impairment right up to the very end, or no significant impairment, and the blood gases don't behave like black lung. That's what we get pulmonary specialists who say that. It's not even contradicted in any significant way. It's just a matter of considering it and explaining what his reasons are. We're not asking. I'm not sure, frankly, how this case would come out. Most ALJs just make another award. But we are entitled to have our evidence considered. And we didn't get it. And the administrative law judge did not give an explanation why our evidence didn't come up to the standard of credibility and most weight. And we don't have the burden of proof here either, don't forget. Let me turn to the, I think, somewhat more difficult, and not that that's not difficult, but some more programmatic issues, and those are on the attorney's fees. First of all, Mr. Rao says that he has a special rate for black lung. And your decision in McCandless says you can't have a special rate for black lung, you can't have a special rate for a shifted fee. That's just an enhancement. So that's illegal, plain and simple. There's nothing more to say about that. The second question, and this is on costs. You know, the Department of Labor wrote a regulation shifting costs, and it was struck down a couple months ago by D.C. Circuit. D.C. Circuit said that we have the American rule, and you can't deviate from it unless you have express congressional authority. Well, the Department of Labor's got authority all over the place, except for the only kind you have to have, which is express congressional authority. They don't have it. The American rule, if you read the power of the Supreme Court's pronouncement, Alyeska Pipeline and West Virginia Hospital versus Casey. This is not up to the people in the Labor Department. It's just not up to them. It is up to Congress, period. And they don't have it. D.C. Circuit struck down their rule, and I don't know what they're going to argue here today. I suppose technically they can come to the Seventh Circuit and argue the same thing they argue in the D.C. Circuit, which is what they did in their brief, but D.C. Circuit is correct here. The third issue on fee shifting is a very interesting one, and that is on you have a rule here, Oostrac, which holds that an attorney in a fee-shifting context is permitted to get a fee, a shifted fee for work done defending their fee. And I don't have a problem with that. That's fine. But the environment is this, that the fee in a fee-shifting case, whether it's a Title VII case, a Black Lung, Longshore, environmental case, it's supposed to replicate roughly the private sector. And if I bill the way this bill came, let me tell you, my clients wouldn't pay it, and if I sued them, I sure as hell wouldn't get my fees for it. The problem here is not that we are being obstreperous. The problem here is that here's a person who hasn't followed the rules of applying for a shifted fee. And, you know, we say that there's a lack of billing judgment. This is the kind of thing, you look at this is really incredible. I don't know that you've had the time to look at the details of the fee-shifting environment here. But this is a case where he's got 2.3 hours to prepare notice of appearance. First of all, he didn't properly justify the hourly rate. He applied for his Black Lung hourly rate. And, you know, unfortunately, the Labor Department never looks at the fees. The board, the ALJ. You could apply for, you know, as long as you weren't asking for $1 million, you could get it. The thing is, we got a whole set of rules on this. We are entitled to have these rules applied. We are entitled to have them applied, not just in the Seventh Circuit, where they are applied, and then all the other circuits where they're applied, but we're entitled to have them applied before the department. And then we wouldn't have to come to the Seventh Circuit. And we don't want to come here.
There's a $15 difference between his non-lung rate and the Black Lung rate.
Right. It's not a lot of money.
An hour.
That's right. But it's the law that he is not entitled to it. And in this case, it's $15. And in other cases, the last one was $125. And I've seen him for a whole lot more than that. It is an important principle. And you have here, you know, real amazing kinds of things going on, where the doctor will bill, you know, 1/10 of an hour to talk on the telephone. And the attorney bills 2 hours to talk to the doctor. In the same talk on the same day. I suppose you could have spent a lot of time getting ready for it, but, you know, when you bunch these, I'll tell you, if I submitted bunched fee applications, and we put this in here, where, you know, you got 15 things in an entry, I guarantee you it'd come right back from my client. I mean, there's, and we've listed a bunch of them on page 30 of our brief. Incredible amounts of time. 11 hours traveling to consult with another attorney down in Carbondale. For what? Now, they said, he said that it was because he needed to have some literature. Well, frankly, I don't know what literature is not available on the internet or interlibrary loan or for $30 rather than for 11 hours worth of attorney time, but there's nothing cited, so I don't know what it is. 4.55 hours consulting with a field representative of the Wabash Valley Coal Miners Respiratory Clinic. These fees with real pedal to the metal. And it's not right. And we have a right to object to it. And we shouldn't have to pay. Because the thing is that our objections are not unreasonable. If our objections were unreasonable, borderline, sure. We don't make those kind of objections because it just causes more money anyway. But this is not that kind of case. So, thank you. I'll have some rebuttal.
We'll hear now from Ms. Rapolo. You're going to argue first, Mr. Roach? I'm sorry, the card I have is reverse order. Please continue.
Good morning. We believe this is a substantial evidence argument that's raised by Ziegler. This is a battle of experts case. Mr. Hawker's evidence showed that numerous physicians diagnosed complicated pneumoconiosis. Some of the physicians in this case diagnosed only regular simple pneumoconiosis, and one physician, Dr. Fino, determined that all of Mr. Hawker's breathing maladies were caused by tuberculosis. The standard in this circuit is that the weighing of expert opinions is the province of the administrative law judge. Judge Jansen carefully weighed all of the evidence. Now, you just heard Mr. Ziegler argue that tuberculosis caused all of Mr. Hawker's pulmonary impairment and that, or all of his breathing maladies, and that there was no pulmonary impairment. That's just basically what he said, and he said that Judge Jansen didn't even look at this evidence. Well, while he was arguing that, I looked at this. I looked back at Judge Jansen's decision. He actually did review both of those, and he came to that to these conclusions that there were there. First of all, on the appellate record on page 36, Dr. Cohen talks about both of these things. Dr. Cohen, who's a physician here in Chicago, and he's a well-known in these areas, he opines that the opacities could not possibly be caused by tuberculosis. And that was because he'd actually gone through tests regarding tuberculosis and had a biopsy. He actually had two biopsies. And both biopsies did not show any evidence of tuberculosis. Second, Ziegler just argued that there was no pulmonary impairment. Well, Judge Jansen quotes Dr. Cohen saying, Dr. Cohen stated that he did not believe Mr. Hawker retained the physiologic capacity to perform the duties of his last coal mining job, i.e. shoveling coal and carrying tools 700 feet. So Judge Jansen clearly evaluated this evidence. Second, he says Judge Jansen made a decision based only on the x-rays. He didn't look at anything else. Didn't review anything else. Well, it's also not correct. On page 39 of the record, Judge Jansen says, Dr. Jones, Miles Jones out of St. Louis, in Missouri, diagnosed progressive massive fibrosis, which is complicated pneumoconiosis, from biopsy evidence and review of all the medical records. Second, Dr. Tarver and the coal company's own physician, own radiologist, found progressive massive fibrosis on the high-resolution CT scan. So the information provided by Ziegler is not correct. What Judge Jansen did is he did what the rule requires him to do when there's a question of whether complicated pneumoconiosis is present in a case. He reviewed all of the evidence and put it all together. If all of the evidence led to the belief by Judge Jansen that supported a finding of complicated pneumoconiosis under 20 CFR 718.304, then he's entitled to the irrebuttable presumption. He weighed together the biopsy, x-ray, and other medical evidence, including the high-resolution CT scans and the narrative medical evidence. And that's what he came up with, complicated pneumoconiosis. Now, turning quickly then to the attorney fee issue, he's made some statements. Ziegler's made some statements that if he sent this bill out to his clients, that his clients wouldn't pay it. Well, it doesn't matter whether his clients would pay for the bill. This is exactly the kind of bill that I send to all of my clients.
Can you speak to the issue of the difference of the rate?
I'm glad you asked that, and yes, I can. The interrogatory that was provided to our firm states one thing, and it says whatever it says. It says something about a standard rate. The standard rate in the firm is just a baseline. I suppose my baseline is probably about 160 right now. But I bill at anywhere between 140 and 190, whatever the particular client will pay. That's the only difference. whatever I can...
Oh, yeah, well, what about when it's the other side that's going to pay?
Well, and that's what we did. We submitted this evidence, and we told the administrative law judge, this is the rate we pay. And in fact, in a case that you just wrote last month, Your Honor, Judge Jansen is allowed to take into account the attorney fee petitions that were raised or were submitted by our firm and actually approved by Judge Jansen for our rate.
Well, what about 11 hours traveling to Carbondale to collect some literature? What's that about?
It was a meeting with another black lung attorney, one who was at the time, and well, still is, Sandra Fogel, who's more experienced than I was. We collected not only literature, but also briefs that she had written. I wanted to go through certain of the briefs. And this comes within the province of the administrative law judge to determine whether that's reasonable or not. The judge determined that it was reasonable in execution of this case.
That's not something that could have easily been done on a telephone and a computer?
Well, I determined that it wasn't. It was something that I needed to travel down, see what she had, and cobble that information together.
Did you meet with her during that time period?
Sure. She spent the entire time with me. I see that my time is up.
Or just about.
Okay. The judge was, he looked at the information, he tried to determine what was reasonable. That's his job. He requested that we put together information in his decision. His original decision that was made December of 1998 in this case. It's been going on for now another almost four years since he made his decision awarding my client benefits. We put together exactly the information that he requested, and he reviewed the information, and that's his job.
Your time has expired now. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Ms. Rapolo.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Rita Rapolo, and I represent the Director of the Office of Workers' Compensation Programs of the Department of Labor. As we did in our brief, I will limit my response to the legal issue in this case, and that has to do with the fee shifting of medical evidence. Specifically, the question is whether Section 28 of the Longshore Act, as incorporated by the Black Lung Act and as implemented by the Black Lung Regulations, whether that provision shifts the fees to the employer of medical reports and depositions, or whether the only expense that may shift is that of the doctor who physically appears at the oral hearing before the ALJ. Counsel for Ziegler says that if you look to the in his brief says if you look to the wording of Section 28. There has to be physical presence at the hearing before there is any shifting. We do not believe that is true because we believe that the Section 28 is ambiguous, it's capable of more than one interpretation, and that the reasonable interpretation is that it is not limited to just those doctors who physically appear.
Do you think that it's ever appropriate for an ALJ to consider the relative numbers of experts providing a given opinion? For instance, if you have 10 experts who all reach one diagnosis and one expert reaches an opposite conclusion, can the ALJ consider that disparity in deciding who to believe? Should the appropriate standard be that numbers alone are not enough, but that it can be one factor to consider?
I believe it can be one factor considered, and I think what you have to look at is that the number is only one part. You have to go beyond that. You have to look at the qualifications, and that oftentimes helps you sort of eliminate some of the readings. But it's a total consideration. It's numbers, and who are those numbers? What are their qualifications? How much did they look at? It's a total picture. But it is a factor to be considered, yes. And I say we did not go into that issue in our brief, but that has been our position. And
on your interpretation of the statute, you know, the statute says if you're attending the hearing, you obviously get compensation. Your position is it should not be limited to that. What's the authority that you rely on for that proposition?
Well, the authority is to look at the words that make up that provision. And a hearing, yes, can be a very discrete period of time. In a Perry Mason type scenario with the administrative law judge and the parties there. But a hearing also can be the whole process of considering the evidence. The Black Lung regulations, for instance, provide that the hearing is not terminated until all the evidence is in, the briefs are in, and even the transcripts have been obtained. That is a different concept of a hearing. And the word encompasses that. You can have a witness that testifies by being physically present, but you can also, as the Longshore Act, provide that a witness may testify by deposition.
But you'll concede, won't you, that the statutory language is arguably ambiguous?
Yes.
And why is that so?
Well, first, as I say, the words themselves of witnesses attending the hearing. Well, a witness can attend in the form of a deposition or a medical report, as in this case. And you know, the Supreme Court in Perales has had no difficulty in the fact that a medical report can come in. I also think it's important to look at it and see that it talks in terms of fees and mileage for necessary witnesses attending the hearing. Mm-hmm. Well, even that, is it mileage for the witnesses attending the hearing? Is attending the hearing talking about those witnesses, the mileage? That's what they're concerned with, the mileage. And they're explaining that it's the mileage for those witnesses attending the hearing. So it's not even clear enough that attending the hearing refers to fees of witnesses attending the hearing, or maybe just it's talking in terms of mileage.
Is it time to go back to Congress, do you think?
Pardon?
Is it time to go back to Congress?
No, I don't believe that is necessary, because I think you also, even if the court does not accept that in itself is ambiguous enough, I think that has to be read with the last sentence of the provision. And it says, the amounts awarded against an employer as costs, fees, and mileage for witnesses shall not in any respect affect or diminish the compensation payable under the Act. If a claimant cannot have the expenses of medical reports and depositions shifted, he clearly will have his benefits diminished. This court has stated that the whole purpose of fee shifting is to make the victim whole. The victim, in this case, will not be made whole if his medical reports and depositions cannot be shifted. And there's no doubt, you know, the Supreme Court has said this is a fee shifting statute when it comes to expenses. And so I think you have to look at the words that are ambiguous, put it in the context of what was intended by this last provision, and also this has been interpreted by the director as allowing that hearing is not just that limited time.
And has Congress delegated interpretive authority over the fee-shifting provision to the director?
The director has authority to implement the black lung regulations and the act, yes, through the secretary. And that, and I would like to address the comment for counsel for Ziegler Coal Company that the recent NMA case.
Ms. Rapolo, your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you. How much time is Mr. Solomon's? Sir, you have 2 minutes.
Just briefly, again, on the merits, this administrative law judge looked at everything that he liked, and he didn't look at the rest of it, and he did not give a reason. If you can find a reason in that opinion, then we lose, but you won't. On the hearing question, the thing is that the Department of Labor made all these, it's really difficult for me to understand how the Department of Labor can write a regulation that's struck down as invalid on its face, and they come down here, make the same argument. I guess, like I said, technically you can do that. It doesn't seem to me to be right to do that. And you have West Virginia Hospital versus Casey. This is not a question of regulatory authority. This is a question of congressional authority. That's what the Supreme Court said. And there isn't any congressional authority. And all the rest of this stuff is a lot of baloney, frankly. All the rest of this stuff is, I mean, you know, let's play a game. Let's see whether we can make this word say something else. The Department of Labor made exactly the opposite argument they made here in Cypress Cumberland Coal Company versus Robbins in the Sixth Circuit, which we've cited to you, where they said that a hearing is a hearing that you go to before the judge, and now it's not. I mean, this isn't really right, frankly, in my view. The question is, you can shift fees for witnesses attending a hearing. Attending a hearing doesn't have a lot of meaning. Attending a hearing means being there. That's what the Sixth Circuit held. That's certainly what I believe the Supreme Court would hold in this context, and that's certainly what that provision means. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Solomons. Indeed, our thanks to all counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. We'll move